The following program is a special presentation from the Talking Information Center. Please enjoy the show.
And welcome to TIC's Low Vision Radio Support Group on the Talking Information Center. Today is Monday, November 18th, 2019. We are live in our studio today, so if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 781-834-4400. That's 781-834-4400. And here is TIC's Executive Director, Anna Dunbar.
Thank you, John, and welcome, everyone, and welcome to all of our listeners listening at home. We're very happy to have you here. We know it's a little drizzly and gross out today, but we have some good information going on to brighten your day right up. So it is our Low Vision Support Group. We're very excited to have everyone here. First, before we jump into things, I want to thank our sponsors of our Low Vision Support Group, Roach Brothers. They very generously donate the food that we provide for our attendees in-house here, so thank you so much to them. I am joined by our host, Carrie McDonald, who hosts our Low Vision Support Groups. We're very thankful to have her in our lives. Carrie is the licensed independent clinical social worker at Interface Social Services, and she also runs a lot of different Low Vision Support Groups through the Carroll Center and through the Mass Association for the Blind. And before I turn it over to her, I just want to remind our listeners at home of some fun and exciting things that we have going on here at TIC. This Thursday, the 21st, our listeners can tune in at 7 p.m. to hear our next live radio theater production, which is My Favorite Wife, which is directed by one of our amazing volunteers, Laura Kerrigan. We're very excited to have that performed here in our community broadcast studio at the Talking Information Center. And of course, you can listen to it at home if you're unable to come be with us that night. And we'll also be providing food and refreshments before the event at 5:30. So that's this Thursday. You can hear or watch our production of My Favorite Wife, directed by Laura Kerrigan. And then coming up next month, to get into the holiday spirit, we're doing a live broadcast of the Plymouth Phil's Holiday Pops concert down at Memorial Hall. So that is December 15th. We're very excited to be broadcasting that live again. And we are also currently accepting donations to benefit the Marshfield Food Pantry for their Thanksgiving food drive. So we've already sent one huge box full of food to the food pantry the other day. So we're hoping to fill up another one for them to give back during this Thanksgiving season. So now, as John said, if you want to call in and be a part of the conversation, you can call 781-834-4400. And now I'm going to turn it over to Carrie McDonald.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon, everyone. Glad you could all be with us both at home and in studio today. So it is my great privilege to welcome our special guest, Bob McGilvery, who is a low vision specialist who works at the Carroll Center. In my years of practice, I have had the pleasure of hearing a lot of great things about Bob and the work he's doing, and I've always wanted to talk with him and get some more details about what he does. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to you, Bob, and you can tell us a little bit about what your role is over at the Carroll Center and what services you provide, and welcome.
Well, thank you, and good afternoon, and it's exciting to be here at another Low Vision group. I talk at many of these groups, and it's a wonderful opportunity for everybody to share information, learn resources, get to know other people in similar situations. So it's exciting to be here to share my programs with you. So let me just tell you a little bit about myself and a little bit about the Carroll Center, and then we'll get into some low vision techniques,
Sounds great.
And technology. So my background is an engineer, and I started as a research engineer at the Carroll Center many, many decades ago. And we developed a low vision program back in the 70s to help people be able to use low vision devices. In those days, it was very simple devices, but I was doing some research on some of the more advanced devices that we use now. So I am a low vision therapist, a certified low vision therapist. That means I help people search for resources that are going to help them use their vision better. As a great deal of the population know, that many people with vision impairment, and even those that are legally blind, have some useful vision. The vision may be distorted, reduced or restricted, but there may be some vision that can be used to help you be able to do some tasks. Of course, there's a lot of other resources for doing things non-visually, like the Talking Information Center, which gives you the ability to gain a lot of information. As you said, 24/7. I'm impressed by that. So I'm going to talk about some of the low vision approaches that we use. But first, let me give you a little bit about the Carroll Center. The Carroll Center for the Blind is an organization that was founded many, many years ago as a support program for people that have vision impairment. But in 1954, Father Tom Carroll, who was assigned to work with war-blinded veterans, opened the first residential rehabilitation program for the public. There were residential rehabilitation centers for the veterans, but this was the first public program. And right now, the Carroll Center offers some of these residential on campus, you live there, type programs, as well as many outreach programs. And I bet you there's some people in this room that has had some of those outreach programs. The Carroll Center offers a community-based orientation and mobility program where our staff can come to you and help you learn to use a cane, how to get around, how to use your vision in your environment, how to be safe in your home. We also have outreach educational services where we have teachers that go in and help the students in the school system develop their skills, whether it's Braille or use of technology, things like that. But when most people think about the Carroll Center, they think about the programs that happen there. These are intensive training programs to help people develop the skills they may need to go to school, go to work, or live independently in the home. And sometimes the programs are as short as a week or two, or maybe as long as 16 weeks, depending on the needs and what has to happen after you finish the program. So the Carroll Center is on Center Street in Newton, Massachusetts, but if you're in the residential program, you would live there. The Carroll Center also has recently received funding to help people, the senior population, the mature people like me and you, be able to learn technology skills. So they have short-term programs to do that. It may be a few days, it may be a week or so. And this is very helpful with the technology that's out there and how many people depend on it but don't know how to deal with it. So we have those types of programs. And we have an intensive computer training program where if a person needs to get back to work and has to use a certain type of program like Excel or PowerPoint, and they have to use magnification or speech, they might be able to learn how to be proficient in that period of time, and then maybe go to work. So what I do is a little bit different. Jack has a question.
Oh, yes. Here, can I steal your mic for a second?
So we have a question in the audience here, or a comment.
Yes.
I think
our dog needs
to go. No, we don't. It's a private comment. So what do? Is I am a low vision therapist, as I mentioned. What happens when you have a vision impairment? I think everybody in this room, well, maybe everybody in this room, have had vision change over their life. And all of a sudden, you can't do what you want to do or what you used to do. So what do? The first thing you do is you go to your eye doctor. And what is your plan? Well, you're hoping the eye doctor will give you glasses to correct the problem. But if you have a disease, if you have an injury, if you have inflammation, if you have some types of problems there, glasses may not and probably won't help. So what happens next? Well, the doctor does treatment. We had a very interesting conversation before this program started of the audience participants talking about all the different treatments they went through. Laser treatment, injections, Botox, all kinds of things. So you're hoping that will help. And maybe it will. And maybe it won't. And what happens when it doesn't? Well, in too many cases, the doctor says, there's nothing more I can do. And you might hear, there's nothing more that can be done.
Right.
And therefore, you don't search out other resources. Or the doctor doesn't let you know of other resources. Some do, but too many do not. And think about your situation before you found TIC, before you found out about this low vision group. You were probably in isolation. And in this isolation, you don't learn the resources. So there's a real value in this low vision group in seeking out resources. What we do at the Carroll Center, and what I do in particular, is help people find those solutions that will work for them, whether they're magnifiers, it might be special lighting, could even be electronic devices, or it could be the use of special marker pens or things like that. And that's our goal, to help people in that end of things. So I offer these low vision services, as I mentioned, as a low vision therapist. You may have gone to a doctor who specializes in low vision. Some people have mentioned that earlier. Or you may have gone to the doctor and the doctor sends you to us to try things. Or maybe your ophthalmologist is wise enough to know that there's places like the Carroll Center and many of the other organizations that we have here in this area and in Massachusetts. So at the Carroll Center, we offer a number of low vision programs. The program that I offer consists of a number of different components or a number of different offerings. My most popular program is what I call a senior vision assessment. It's not an examination by a doctor. It's an assessment of what you're able to do, what you're not able to do, what you want to do, and getting exposed to the resources. So this senior vision assessment lasts about an hour and 15 minutes to an hour and a half, and I will evaluate the extent of your vision problems. I'll try to help you understand why you can see some things and you can't see other things. We'll look at the resources that are available to help people. And then we'll see what your response is to those devices. One person may work well with one device, while it may not work for another one, and they need something different. But all this depends on what you want to do, what your goals are, what your tasks are. If you want to work at a sewing machine, as I worked with a woman last week, that's different than if you want to fill out your checkbook, which is different than if you want to use a computer, which is different than if you want to watch television. So we will look at all those goals and see if there's something that might help you. So this senior vision assessment is basically a functional assessment of your visual performance, and we'll try to help with that. Another program I offer is an assistive technology assessment for students. The school system wants to know this student is in the third grade, fifth grade, ninth grade, a senior in high school. What are the best types of devices and equipment that might help them? Maybe one of those special reading machines we talked about earlier, but one that talks, or one that can look at the classroom board where you could magnify the image and put it on your laptop computer. So I do this for the school systems to help them find what's best for the student. Another program that I'm particularly fond of, but I don't get as many referrals, is my vision, use, and employment. That's where I take my engineering background and I go to job sites. and I look how a person with a vision impairment might be able to do it. Or maybe there's someone there doing a job, and I have to help them be able to do it better. Or there might be a new task. All of a sudden now, we used to do this paperwork-wise, and now I have to do it on a computer. Or I've had a change in vision. So this allows me to go out there and evaluate the situation and try to find the tools that might help an individual. I've worked in a number of different big companies, small companies, mom-and-pop stores. I've worked in government situations. I'm planning to go to the IRS hopefully soon. And I've been at the FBI. I've been to Raytheon, all these different places, as well as self-employment, where a person's working out of their basement, but they're making gadgets that need to be made to continue with the business. So those are the three major programs, but I have others. One is the low vision demonstrations. The Carroll Center happens to be unique in that we get a lot of the new technology that's available. The companies let us test it out. And so what we are able to do is demonstrate it to people that are interested. These are more advanced and more sophisticated devices, but we have that. I have a device right now I'm testing that's one of those reading machines with the big screens, and you put the paper under it, and sometimes we call it a CCTV, that folds up. You can take it under your arm. Not only that, when you have it, you can do live reading, the newspaper, or read your medicine bottle. Press a button, it becomes a computer. So these types of things, as they advance, we have to know them. We have to know how to run them so that we can show them to those people that it might be of value to. So we have two other things at the Carroll Center. I'm not as much involved is that we have low vision examinations. So there are doctors, two of them, that come in once a month and do examinations. So what's different between a low vision examination and my assessment? Well, low vision examination, these are the doctors that are going to deal with your eye condition, making sure you're having the right treatment, making sure you haven't had a need for changes of your eyeglasses, even though you don't think they make a difference. They might make a difference on the eye chart. They're going to, like I said, monitor your condition. They're going to let you know of some of the resources, and then they might refer you to someone like me to take it a step further, maybe train you in the devices that you have or are using or they recommend. So that's one other area that we have. And probably one area that is utilized the most by the community in general, probably have the most number of client contacts, is our low vision store. So we have a consumer store where you can walk in, go online, or call and talk about all those things that you might find helpful, such as bold line pens, canes, talking watches, kitchen measuring devices, magnifiers, electronic magnifiers, bold line paper, all those types of things. So that's an opportunity to try these things before you buy them. You really don't want to buy a $1,000 piece of equipment if you haven't tried it. You don't even want to buy a $50 piece of equipment without having tried it. So it's a little bit of a trip from here to Newton, but we have some low vision groups that get a van and go up as a group. And we'll give you a tour of the agency as well as let you do some shopping if that's what you need. So those are the basic services that we wanted to talk to you about. I have handouts on all that. It's only in print right now, but you'll be able to get it online if you're going on, if you are computer savvy. But I have these. I'll hand them out at the end, maybe after we finish broadcasting, and go through them again with you. But what are low vision devices, techniques, and technology? Well, as we were discussing earlier, a number of people in this room, and I'm sure in the audience that's listening, have different types of eye condition, but the most common one is what?
Can't read.
Macular degeneration. Yeah. All right? Macular degeneration is changes in the center area of vision where you gain the most information. It's the sharpest part of the eye. And when you start having changes there, whether it's just distortions or missing pieces or even a big blind spot, you're going to have trouble with, as you said, reading or detail. You're not going to recognize people from across the room. You're not going to be able to tell whether it's a $1 bill or a $5 bill. Maybe a $2 bill. Somebody snuck that in. You never know. All right. Don't see many $100 bills. But so with a loss of ability to see detail, your life changes. You struggle with reading, identifying which pill bottle is this. How do I deal with my remote control? How do I read the subheadings on the scroll when I'm watching the news? When you lose central vision, you lose ability to see detail, or it's distorted. So now you have to rely on your peripheral vision, your side vision. Well, your side vision does a lot for you. It helps you orient you to where we are in your environment. Like, it's my peripheral vision that counts how many people here. I don't have to look at each face to count a person. I can just go along. To get out of the room, I can negotiate around the chairs with my peripheral vision. I can even maybe see the stairs, but I can see the railing here. All right? So the peripheral vision picks up that. So when you have a loss of central vision or changes in your central vision, you have changes in what I sometimes call the what system. It identifies things. What is this that I'm looking at? What is that? So we have that. Now, another common problem with people that have vision impairments is a loss of the peripheral vision. And maybe their central vision is okay. We see that a lot with a condition called glaucoma, or a disease called retinitis pigmentosa, or neurological problems. So what happens in this situation? Well, in this situation, you might have something that some people call tunnel vision, like looking through a tube. I can see what I look at, but I don't see anything else around it. So I might be able to recognize everybody in the room, but I get up, turn around, and I'm going to step on that poor dog there. And we'll have a lot of noise then, huh? Or I might bump into the chair. So here we have a loss of the where system, where things are located. I use this analogy a lot because I used to lecture at Boston University. This psychiatrist does the medical aspects of vision impairment. He had me come in every year. And I don't know if he was mean or he was trying to be helpful, but it would be right after they had their midterm examinations. And so he was hoping I'd cheer them up, I guess. So here I am with these students, and I'm talking about things. So to make it real, I talked about that building. And I said, well, a person with macular degeneration might be able to see where the door is to get out. They might be able to find the elevator and tell where the buttons are. Get down the first floor, get out the doors, though they're glass doors, walk around the corner, not trip on the fire hydrant, not trip on the trash can, go into, there was a Burger King there, go into Burger King, go up to the counter, look at the menu, order, pick up their tray, and then trip over the person behind them. And then they go to find a place to sit down, and they sit down at a table that someone else is already sitting down at. So that's the dilemma. Now I mixed the two together. I'm sorry. The macular degeneration won't be able to read the menu. So they're going to ask for help, and they're going to say, I'm visually impaired. And the counter person is going to say, what are you talking about? You got in here very well. It's the person with the restricted field that's going to have trouble finding the elevator button, trouble finding the door, trouble finding Burger King, and people are rushing to help them, and they all of a sudden read the menu that's up on the wall. And then they're the ones that turn around and trip over the person behind them. So we have that dilemma. You're sighted among the blind and blind among the sighted. And so we look at different, and of course there's a combination of these two types of problems, loss in the center vision and loss of the peripheral vision. So I've been seeing lately, I don't know why, a lot of people that have macular degeneration and also glaucoma. So that becomes the double whammy. Hmm. But that doesn't mean there isn't help. So let's talk about the types of things that help people. The number one thing that people first gravitate to help them see better, and you all know it because you all experience it, is magnification. If the image is bigger, you might see it better. How do you make an image bigger? You get closer to it. You can't read the clock in the kitchen? Well, maybe you get so close you can touch it, and then you can read it. You can't see much on the television? What do? You sit closer to the television. You might be able to see it better. That's one form of magnification. Another form of magnification, and I'm sure people have done this, is instead of reading regular print book, read large print books. Or write with a bold marker and write big. Make your shopping list in big print. That's making the object you want to see bigger. And then, of course, there's the use of magnifiers. How many people have used magnifiers here? Okay? So a majority of the people have used magnifiers. And what you are finding out if you use magnifiers is that these optical magnifiers bend light. And when they bend light to make the magnification greater, you have to have more curvature of the lens. So if you have a two-power magnifier, that could be about 4 or 5 inches around. And then you have a five-power magnifier, that's about 2 to 3 inches around. Then you have a 10-inch magnifier, it's 1 inch. So as the power increases, the magnifier gets smaller, and you have to hold it closer to the material. So you have some limitations. With all the low vision approaches we're going to talk about, there's always some limitations. So I have many people, we find something that helps, and they say, I don't want to use it because I don't want to read differently than I did. Or I'm reading too slow, or it's taking too much effort. So optical magnifiers are another approach. Now, although it's been around since the 70s, there are newer models of video magnifiers, or what some people call CCTVs. So that was in discussion before the meeting started. Does everybody know what these reading machines are I'm talking about? Nope? Okay. Of course, Jack knows. One person doesn't, and a couple do. So guess what? I brought some with me. So we're going to take a look at one. And mine are portable and battery operated. So that doesn't mean this is what you'd be interested in. It's just one of the devices. So I'm going to go up to the table behind me. And that's pretty far away from everybody. But I got to hold the mic. So I'm not going to carry this thing around. But I am going to open it up, and I'll describe for everybody out there what I have here. Is I have a device that has a platform on it. Oops, I hope I'm not going to do feedback here. And it has a flat computer screen on it. And it has a built-in camera. So I aim the camera down. I turn this on. I hope I have enough battery power left, because I keep showing it and not charging it up. So right now, some of you might be able to tell there's something there, but some of you can't. So I'm going to magnify, and I'm going to change the contrast. And this is a lousy piece of paper to show you. So let me show you this one. Much better. Some of you can tell from that far away that you can see print. If I make it bigger, you might even be able to read print. But imagine, and you may, after we're done, come up and take a closer look. I've changed the contrast of the print. There's my hand in color. So I can put a medicine bottle under here. I can put a book under here. I can change the contrast. I can even change the colors of the contrast. So for some people, this becomes the unique and powerful reading device. Mm-hmm. All right? You get an idea? Those already know. Do you get an idea what this is like?
I understand.
Yeah. Okay. So this is nice, but the problem with it is it's big enough that it becomes a piece of furniture.
Yeah.
You have to go to it to do your reading.
Yeah.
So what happens if you have a menu you want to read? Or you have something in a store you want to read a price or a label? He says. There it is. So here's a pocket version. Again, having only one hand, I'll just show you that without dropping it, I can see the print much better now. You see any of that, Jack?
No.
Well, I can make it bigger, but that may not be what you need, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay?
You carry that with you then.
You can carry it with you. And of course, you'd move it across the material to read with. It's not going to be reading that way. So the new ones can see the print, and you press a button and it reads it out loud to you.
Wow.
So that becomes valuable, right? And they have variable magnification. And one thing we haven't talked about is contrast. It has variable contrast. So those are some of the newer devices that we're excited about and find useful. What's a major disadvantage of those?
Cost.
Yeah. The desktop one that I showed you is $3,200. The pocket one I showed you is about
$600.
Wow. So they're expensive. But there's programs to get some of these, right?
Yes.
So you can get them through different organizations, different support programs, things like that. I'll just name a few. Perkins Talking Book Library has a loaner program. If you're a patron of the Talking Book Library, they might be able to help you. The Carroll Center leases these out. So they don't have a lot, but they have a few. If you need something like this, you can talk to the Carroll Center about a lease. Some fraternal organizations or support organizations like Lions Clubs and Kiwanis have known to provide those. And there are used ones around. But you got to know what works for you, what features. All right? So that's the range of magnification devices. Of course, there's special reading glasses that you can hold print 2 inches from your nose to read with, that type of thing. So what's the other types of low vision approaches that we use? Another one that's very helpful that you actually may have seen when I turned these on is contrast. The higher the contrast, the more visible things can be. So if you have something you're looking at and it stands out from its background, then you might be able to see it better. I'll give you an example. Looking around the room, we have a woman with a blue sweater and the brown background stands right out. Okay? But then we have a woman here with a navy blue jacket with the black chairs behind her. Doesn't stand out so much. You're outstanding. All right. So contrast becomes important. When you're walking around, say you have a beige easy chair on a beige rug. You may not see that easy, but if you put a white sweater over it, then you're going to see it better. If you're writing, you might want to use bold pens, those types of things. You've all seen in some places stairs and steps that have high contrast edging to them, much easier to see, especially coming down because everything looks like a ramp. Okay, but those usually yellow lines on the stairs make them stand out. So that becomes valuable. So we look at all these different ways of enhancing contrast. And another factor that becomes very important is lighting. Now, lighting is necessary for seeing. If we shut off these lights and had no lights from the behind us, it'd be dark, that we'd all be at a disadvantage of recognizing people. So light's important. But when you have a vision impairment, you have a cataract, you got hemorrhaging in your eye, you got edema, bleeding in the back of the eye, then light needs to be controlled. With macular degeneration, your photoreceptors aren't working like they used to. They might need more light. So some of you might find using a magnifier works much better when you have a bright light on the source. But then, if you're walking around a room like this, the lights from the overhead lights might cause glare and you need sunglasses. All right? So we look at all those areas to make sure you have what you need. The right type of light, the right angle of light, the right spread of light. All those types of approaches can be valuable. So we've talked about magnification. We talked about contrast. We talked about lighting. There's another area that's just as important as those, is that of adaptation, adapting to new ways of doing things. So if I have to read with a magnifier, I might have to hold it up to my eye. And what does that mean? I got to bring the material up to my eye, or I got to bend over to the table. All right. If I'm reading one of these reading machines, I have to go to it. I have to learn how to use all those controls. We had one woman earlier talking about all the different buttons on her machine. So you have to adapt to learn these types of things. You have to be willing to do things differently. Sometimes that is the area where this all breaks down. It may be too difficult if you are not properly trained. Just being given a product doesn't mean it's going to work for you. We have a long-term expression in the low vision field, the top drawer syndrome, where you go to your doctor, they give you a magnifier, you don't know how to use it, it worked in the doctor's office, oh my God, what am I going to do? And it ends up in the top drawer not being used. Actually, we've been using that term since the 70s, and I heard it this weekend at a professional conference that they're still talking about that type of thing. So we are great advocates for training, learning to use your devices properly, efficiently, and productively. So you want to be able to do that. And there's a number of ways of doing this. If you go to a low vision doctor, they may recommend that an occupational therapist with training come out to work with you. If you see us in the Carroll Center, I might be able to do that. If you work with the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind, they have a whole staff of what's called rehabilitation teachers, and they go out and they help you with this. So there's resources. And of course, that's why you're all meeting here, to learn about some of these resources that might be useful to you. So putting all this together, we see that there's all these different low vision approaches to things that might be helpful to using your vision. But sometimes vision's not the only or not even the best way to do things. So if I wanted to read, I just had it out here somewhere. Now I put it over here. If I wanted to read this business card because this is where I was going and I don't remember the address, I might pull out a magnifier. Maybe I can read it. I might pull out a video magnifier if I have one of these handheld devices. Or I might pull out my phone. Now, not everybody has smartphones. Who has smartphones here?
Yeah.
Ooh, more than I thought. Okay, so I'm opening my smartphone, and I'm telling it to do something with one hand. There we go. That didn't work. How do you like that? It's turning on a special free program.
Short text.
It said short text. So this is a special app that's free on my phone. And it turns my phone into a talking camera. Now, I have to aim my camera at what I want it to talk. So I'm going to try to hold this over my business card.
Bob, 00B. Carroll Center for the Blind. Bob McGillivray, certified low vision therapist. Rehabilitation engineer 777.
So I could take this shopping... Whoops, I could take this shopping, and maybe if I can aim the camera right, it's reading the whole thing, it won't shut up. I can read labels or even prices. Okay, but you got to learn how to use it, and that takes some technology gestures and approaches. But can you learn it? Maybe. We can judge that. We can help you. I'm just going to try something a little bit different here. As I'm going up here, I'm going to aim it at the wall.
TL Incorporated. Rock, any radio theater.
Not quite. It didn't read the whole thing.
Talking, any.
I'm going to go again.
Radio theater.
So I read part of what's on the wall there, but not the whole thing. It was all dependent on how steady I can hold my arm up there.
Yeah, that's what's tricky about a lot of those. I find that's a big challenge with the smartphone apps, trying to get the camera aimed right.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, sorry, exactly. So this app I can put on, it's called Seeing AI, but it's one of many. Okay? This is the free one for sure. So it has a number of what they call channels. That's one channel. They have documents. I can take a picture of a page and it'll read it out. But I can tell it to go back and go forwards, skip. I can even save that document in my phone. Then it has another one Jack's got a question.
Thank you. Here you go, Jack.
Bob, would that read a menu? Would that app on the phone?
Okay, so he asked the question, will this read a menu? It depends on what mode you put it on. So we heard short text. It's the easiest of the ways of using this. Okay? So if I put it on a menu, it's going to read across the page as if it's a sentence. So it may see the item listing and the prices as two different columns. Yeah. So yes, it will read what's on a menu, but it may not make sense to you. Do you understand what I mean? Because
yes.
It will read and then it won't go across because it'll see dot, 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 dot where the price is. So you may not know the price, but it will read some of a menu. I'm going to show you a different feature. Is I can turn this on to person mode. I'm sorry, channel. And I can aim it at somebody. And then it will tell me something about the person I take a picture of. It will tell me their facial expression, whether it's male or female. I don't know if they're going to change that. And whether they're smiling or grumpy or happy or indifferent. So it can tell me that, but better than that, if this were a group I worked with every day, I could take your picture, and then I could type in your name.
Wow.
And next time the camera sees you, it will tell me who it is.
That's pretty cool.
That's
okay?
Really great.
So here it is. The only person it knows is me. Oh, well, it'll tell me.
Four faces.
So I got four faces out there. So it knows me. My nickname is Bob Mack. So let's see if I aim the camera towards me.
Bob Mack near bottom right, 1 foot away.
Okay. So it can read the barcode on food products and tell you what the barcode says. Like I use the Rice-A-Roni example. Here's a box of Kleenex. We'll see if it'll work here. I have to get it into that mode.
Product.
Let me see. Yep, there it is. And I see, I got to aim it, remember.
Processing.
Ooh. You know what it did? It wore down my phone. Because I think I now ran out of power. I had it on too long. I haven't charged my phone in a while. Well, that's the end of my phone for the day.
But I will say that app does work pretty good. It does some neat things. It's very helpful. That's one of many that I have at home on mine.
So, yeah, good. You use it?
Yeah.
Yourself? Yeah.
I like it.
And there are others. Now, I'm going to tell you about a little bit more technology that's out of the realm of low vision. And then I'm going to go back to one more, and I think then we're going to wrap it up. So, there's two types of programs you can use on your phone or you can use with special glasses. One is called Be My Eyes, and the other one is called IRA, A-I-R-A. What these are special cameras. You can use your smartphone camera or a special camera on a pair of glasses. And when you want to activate it, you make a phone call to the company. A live person comes on. And I say to them, can you tell me how many people are in the room? I said, okay, rotate your camera around the room and they'll count them for you. And can you say, read what's on the wall? Talking Information Network Radio Theater. It'll tell me that that's there. I dropped a $20 bill. Where is it? Put your hand down, to the left, to the right, closer to you. It's a live, trained person telling you about that. There's a cost. IRA is about a dollar a minute. First 5 minutes can be free. So it's just setting it up and knowing how to manage, aiming the camera or your head with the glasses. So You have a question?
I was just going to say, I've heard that there's some type of device, if you have to go into Boston to a doctor, you can go so far and then press a button on your phone, and it will direct you to the doctor's office. It, you know, somehow you press it, and it, you'll tell them where you want to go, and it will tell you to go down such and such a street and up so many stairs. That's what I've just heard about.
Oh, a GPS app, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're talking about a GPS app, which is like the ones you might use in your car, that are for pedestrians in your pocket. Now, those are more complicated because you got to get the right one for what you want to do. It's not just any GPS app. So there are some of those out there.
There are some designed more for us in mind that specifically sort of work with the blind that are walking to destinations, that kind of thing.
So I want to show you one more thing. And this is where technology goes. So last week I was at a professional conference, and myself and a vendor that sells these products, we did an hour presentation on these types of products. These are taking the technology that many of the young people are using for virtual reality. So they use virtual reality goggles, which usually use a smartphone. And what you do is you wear these glasses, these goggles, with your smartphone, with special applications, and all of a sudden you might be interactive in a 3D world. You may be able to put information in. I could add extra people to this room to make it look like it's more full, those types of things. What we're doing in the low vision field is we're taking the camera and making that a video magnifier.
Wow.
That I wear on my head. So I brought one with me. Well, it was in the car anyway. So since it's here, let me grab it. So we're going to just take, I'm going to take 1 second because I think I need 2 hands. And I'll open this up over here. Doesn't matter which brand it is. We talked about 7 of them at our conference, and then last night I found another one that has even more features than the ones we're using. So I'm opening a case here, and in the case I'm going to pull out a pair of goggles that look very strange. I'm going to turn it on first, I hope. Another factor of, is it battery charged? It vibrated, so it should be. I'm going to put it on my head. Now, the problem here, this particular brand takes 50 seconds to get up and running. But what you might be able to tell if I don't bump into anybody, I have a smartphone right here in the front of these funny, thick goggles. On the side, I have a little touchpad like some people have on their computer. If I go like this, I make the image smaller. I go like this, I make the image bigger. All right? So we still have to wait for it to charge up. 2 minutes? Yep, that sounds good. 1 minute to get it going. Okay, there it is. I'm going to press a button. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm just going to make this a little bit smaller image. Okay, that should be enough. Hold it up to your face. Look through it. Don't put the strap on. It'll take too long. Okay, everything's bigger. Look at me. Where are you?
Yep, you're big.
Okay. Anyone else want to try it? Okay, Jack, I'm gonna expect it's not going to be big enough for you. But go ahead, put it on your head, just like that. No, you don't have to put the strap on. Just hold it in front of your eyes. Okay, so now if you found me, I should almost fill the whole screen.
Sure.
Yeah, okay. So you get the idea.
Yeah.
These aren't for everybody. You can try it. No? You want to try it? You want to try it? I knew you wanted to try it. Just hold that up, and now look out here at me.
Oh, I can recognize you.
Yeah. So there it was. She had trouble with detail, reading. Now she has ability. We can make the image bigger and smaller as we need. I can change the contrast if I'm reading text. I can take pictures and save them for later. This one I can even, and some others, take a picture of text, not handwriting, but printed text, and it will read it out loud to me.
Wow.
That's where technology's going. We're expensive again. We're talking $3,000 for something like this. But this is the idea.
What's the name of that device?
There's many different ones out there. This is the Iris Vision.
Okay.
We have the eSight. We have the Patriot Viewpoint. We have the New Eyes. We have a bunch of others. Many different features. I spent, like I said, an hour talking about it at this conference. And everyone was different. Yeah. So there you have an overview of low vision, some of the approaches and some of the technologies. You need to find what works for you, and not everything will.
Yeah.
That's why you need to be properly assessed, a low vision doctor, a low vision therapist, an occupational therapist, a rehabilitation teacher with the commission, their technicians, to find out what works the best. And you might need some training in adapting to it. That gives you an idea of everything.
Thank you so much, Bob.
Thank you, Bob. I'll steal that from you. Well, thank you so much, Bob, for coming and speaking to our group and all of our listeners. That was so informative and wonderful to see all the new updates going on technologically for individuals with low vision. Thank you so much to Carrie for coming out and being with us once again, and to everyone here in the Community Broadcast Studio at TIC. And thank you to all of our listeners at home. Have a great day.